Good to see everyone this evening. Glad you're able to be here. Come in through the raindrops. We had a lot of good rain today. We sure needed it. I don't know about everybody else around. Our hill was getting a little dry. Continuing our study in the establishment of the Kingdom of Israel with the birth of Isaac, son of Abraham and Sarah, we're to Genesis chapter 19, and this is probably one of the better known of the Old Testament stories. And unfortunately, has a great deal of relevance in today's society. And that's, as I view that, very tragic, for lack of a better word. Many of the ills of our society stem from some of the same kinds of things that were apparently going on in the cities of the plain. And this story, most of the time, we just mention Sodom and Gomorrah. But initially, there were five of those cities that were destined for destruction. So this particular sin or state of sinfulness was in that entire area, not just confined to one little place. I know when I was growing up, the I guess the catchphrase for reference to homosexuality or something like that was San Francisco, because that's, you know, that's where those folks were. But now, that's apparently everywhere. The people of that community, I don't know exactly what you would call that, but a big portion of our population would have us to think that the number that are engaged in the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah are much higher than they actually are. We have a population of about 350 million people in the United States, and probably the last figures I heard were less than 8 million of those professed to be homosexual. So that's a rather small percentage compared to what is daily bombarding us on the news and the TV and whatever. You can't turn on a TV program anymore, especially the network primetime shows and that kind of thing, that there's not at least one or more, they refer to them as gay characters. And many of the storylines center around that particular sin. But we are accosted by this daily, as I said earlier. And here is a very good illustration of what God thinks about that. And if you read very closely, as we go through this this chapter 19, you see that the people that inhabited Sodom and Gomorrah, they were not just content with living their lives and not interfering with anybody else. they had to have everybody else involved. You know, in your face kind of thing, which is what we see from this particular aspect of our society today. You know, I'm not going to go out and physically harm someone who doesn't believe in anything really different than me. We're not, as Christians, we're not told to do that. We're told to stand up for God's word and to defend it at all costs. But we are in most cases content to allow someone to live their life, no matter how depraved it might be. But this particular aspect of our society is not, they're not content with allowing us to live our lives as we see fit. And I don't know where all the problems started, but I do know that we didn't have these kind of problems when I was in school. Most of you know I was raised in Winston County, just in the edge of Bankhead Forest, and so when deer season came along, just about everybody went. Well, you go through the parking lot at Winston County High School, and the ones that didn't ride the bus usually had a pickup or some old jalopy kind of car. It was not any of the new versions or anything like that. Usually it was dad or mom's hand-me-down or something we put together ourselves. But you go through that parking lot, and there'd be just about every vehicle had a gun in it. And we never had any idea of shooting anybody with that gun. And, you know, when we elected officers, nearly all the time we had a chaplain as part of our slate of officers. When we had assemblies, we had prayers and we had Pledge of Allegiance and all of those kinds of things. And you know, like I said, we didn't have all of this other stuff. That's I just don't know if I could make it as a teacher now. I'd either be in jail or have killed somebody probably. But you know, that is just a sign. You know, we say a sign of the times, but if we look at this chapter here, chapter 19. Those times have been around. It's not anything new. In fact, you may have heard that before, that there's never anything new. It's just recycled or come out under another name. That's especially true in education, because we're dealing with people. People haven't changed since Adam and Eve. All they do is come out with a new name for it. Somebody will get their PhD and write a thesis and put it in a briefcase, and then they're an expert. So they go around telling everybody else what they're supposed to do, and not worrying about what local expertise there is. But anyway, that's sort of off the subject here. But let's just go through this chapter and look at what's about to happen. Now, God has and two of His we'll call them helpers. Have met with Abraham. They've had a meal with him. Abraham has exhibited his hospitality, and so God takes him apparently sort of on a hill. Now, he was living in the hill country. right up here is Mamre, and somewhere in that vicinity is where he was living. So it may be possible that he could see down into this area. Now, the Dead Sea, we mentioned that last week. The Dead Sea is below sea level. So it's in a valley and in the bottom of a valley. So if he were up here in the hill country somewhere, it may be possible that he could have looked down into this area and have witnessed that destruction. But God took him up there and said and told him what was going to happen. And so they may have been watching all this time while the two angels went into Sodom. So beginning with verse number 1. Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening as Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. Now, it was a common practice at that time for the leaders of the city to meet in the city gate. Many times they conducted whatever business that needed to be conducted there. If you go over to the book of Ruth, and when Boaz was trying to redeem Ruth, one of the things that he had to do was go to the elders that met at the city gates. And instead of having a courthouse or city hall like we do today, that was simply their practice. And there were various other kinds of things. In remembering that story of Ruth, one of the things he had to do, Boaz had to do, was to stamp his approval on this deal, was to take his shoe off. Now, I don't really know what that represented, but that was just their way of doing it. Just like you may have seen an old Western movie or something, when two guys were going to make an agreement and they both spit in their hand and then shake hands on it. I don't know where that comes from either. But it's just some kind of tradition, some kind of way that they did things. Well, here was Lot, apparently a prominent member of that community, and he would have obviously been one of the most, if not the most, wealthy person there. We know that his possessions were a close second to Abraham's, because that's one of the reasons why he was there, because they had to split up. They had so much possessions that there was no area there that would satisfy them or that could sustain them. So he was in a position of prominence when these two angels came in. Continuing in verse 2, and he said, this is Lot, "Now behold, my lords, please turn aside into your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet, that you may rise early and go on your way." That they said, however, "No, but we will spend the night in the square." So, you know, that's very similar to what we might do if, you know, somebody came to the church and we met them at church and they were traveling through, and we might invite them to come home with us, and they might say, "Well, I don't want to put you out. We've made arrangements," and so on and so forth. But that's sort of what was going on here. And this would have also been not uncommon, especially in good weather, for the strangers, if there were no inn or hotel there, or a place of that they could rent a room or something like that, they would spend it in the courtyard in the center of the city. There is some debate. Most scholars think that Sodom and Gomorrah were probably big enough to have been walled cities. They're not definite on having found any remains of them, so we don't know from archaeological digging yet whether they did or not. But that was especially true with walled cities, is if people did not have a permanent place of residence or not have some place already secured that they could come in, the city gates would be closed, and they could simply spend the night out in the open, like I said, if it were good weather, and be relatively safe, probably as safe as they would be in someone's house as far as any physical harm or something like that. So, again, Lot has apparently been trained well. Remember, he has been under Abraham's tutelage for a number of years. And so he has been trained well in the principle of hospitality. In verse 3, he didn't take their argument or their excuse, yet he urged them strongly. So they turned aside to him and entered his house, and he prepared a feast for them and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. This unleavened bread simply indicates relatively fast meal, where they did not have to wait for the bread to rise or anything like that. So that was the purpose of this. Again, it goes, remember the Exodus story. The reason they did not use leaven was because the leavening process took time, and they needed to be ready to go in a moment's notice. And so they wanted to have eaten and have all of that behind them. And they, again, if you leaven something, the way they did then was sort of like we make sourdough and stuff like that today. You have a mother or a hunk of dough that you maybe share or swap with someone, but you keep it going pretty much continuously, and you simply add flour to the mixture and whatever other ingredients you're going to have in it, and then pinch off a part of it to save and just keep that process going. So it was a lengthy, involved process. Anytime they were dealing with haste at all, then they would use something that was bread that was not leavened. Verse 4, after they ate, then obviously they were going to prepare for bed. In verse 4, before they lay down, so after the meal and before they have time to prepare for bed and lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, surrounded the house, both young and old, all the people from every quarter. So this simply indicates how pervasive this sin was. It affected the younger generation. It affected the older generation. I don't know if they had Generation X's or Millennials or whatever, but we have generational differences here. But there are some things, like the church, for instance, is multi-generational. There should be no difference from the youngest Christian that's a member of the Austinville congregation and the oldest member of the Austinville congregation. This crosses all age lines and all genders and, you know, just everything else. It's all inclusive. Well, this depravity was also very pervasive and all inclusive. The term "from every quarter" meant that from the slums, if they had any, up to the mansions, if they had any of those. Every socioeconomic level, every age level was involved in all of this. So that simply indicates how deeply this was ingrained among those people. Verse 5, and they called to Lot and said to him, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may have relations with them." Now, the term that's used here and translated in the New King James Version in the New American Standard Version as relations is the same word that is translated in other places as to know. The King James version uses that term. It actually goes back to the original Hebrew word of yada, Y-A-D-A. And I just broke down and laughed this, I think it was this morning, I was listening to radio, and one of the people that's on the radio, she will use the term yada, yada, yada if she's, you know, mentioning somebody saying something that just goes on and on, or something everybody understands. And I found out that in Hebrew that means to have sex, and that's literally what the word means. And so it, whatever she was saying, it just sounded funny that if you translated it sex, sex, sex instead of yada, 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 it made it funny. I guess you had to be there, but anyway. That is the same word. If you go back to Genesis chapter 4, where Adam is said to have known or had relations with Eve, and then she conceived and had children. And then in 1 Samuel chapter 1, where Hannah and Elkanah have Samuel, it's the exact same word. So what they were saying was, bring these men out because we want to have sex with them. So this, that, you know, they didn't beat around the bush about it. That was what they wanted. In verse 6, Lot tried to talk them out of it. He went out at the doorway and shut the door behind him. He didn't let them in. But I can picture him just sort of squeezing himself through the door and telling a servant or somebody else, you lock this door behind me. As soon as I get out, you lock it and don't let them in. And then he says to the men, please, my brothers, do not act wickedly. Now, behold, I have two daughters who have not had relations. And that's, again, that same yada word there. Please let me bring them out to you and do whatever you like. Only leave the men alone. Well, this wasn't good enough for them. They wanted the men, that, and nothing else would do. So they Lot even offered his daughters, and they that was not what they wanted. They wanted the men. Got a misprint there, and I don't have it memorized, so I'll have to look it up here. Okay, verse 9. But they said, stand aside. Now, this is the men talking to Lot. Furthermore, they said, this one came in as an alien, and already he is acting like a judge. So they're being resentful that Lot came in and he was not one of them, is what they were saying. He's an outsider, and yet he comes in here and acts like a judge, and we're just not going to have that. Now we will treat you worse than them. That's of course what they were saying to Lot. So they pressed hard against Lot and came near to break the door, but the men reached out. And this is the two men, the two angels that had come to visit him. But the men reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house with them and shut the door. And they struck the men who were at the doorway of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves trying to find the doorway. Now, do you see anything strange about that? Here they were interested in this perverted act. They were stricken blind. And what did they do? They didn't try to go home. They were not trying to find, apparently, some source of their blindness or something that they could do to remove the blindness. They were still trying to get in the door. Just, you know, how depraved can somebody be? It's just almost beyond comprehension to see how deeply sin can overtake someone. And that's one of the great things about these Old Testament stories. We say that we don't, the Old Testament is not necessarily essential for our salvation, but knowing all that went on and everything leading up to the New Testament, that kind of thing, and this is one of those things to warn us how precarious a position we may be in, to see how deeply involved in sin these people were, that they were so consumed with it that it even overrode their blindness, at least their physical blindness. Verse 12, then the two men said to Lot, whom else have you here? A son-in-law and your sons and your daughters and whomever you have in the city, bring them out of this place. So they were just telling Lot, if you have any family or people that you want to save, get them out. And this would have, I'm sure, come under the 10 that Abraham got God to agree to. I don't know what would have happened if they had found more than 10 that wanted to get out. But I'm sure these angels and God knew how many there were going to be. And these other men, you can just see from their responses. Now, his daughter, even though, as he had already said earlier, they had not had relations with a man before, but they were considered married or betrothed, which was just as good as married. And so he did have sons-in-law. And so he goes about then trying to get them to leave. Verse 13, for we're about to destroy this place because their outcry has become so great before the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. So the sin has gotten to the point where God just can't stand it anymore. That's what they're saying. That it's gotten to the point where it has already consumed at least these five cities, and it may be spreading farther out. And so God's going to nip it in the bud and get rid of it right here and now. In verse 14, Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law. Now, apparently, they were outside. They were not in the house. So they may have been among that mob that was surrounding the house. They may have been blind, for all I know, since they were out there. Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law, who were to marry his daughters, and said, "Up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city." But he appeared to his sons-in-law as to be jesting. So they just thought it was a big joke. And I'm sure their response was something about, "Are you kidding me? Us leave here?
you're a funny old man.
No, it's the same too. Yes, they went through the betrothing was a ceremony, just as, remember the story of Christ's birth. Joseph and Mary were betrothed, and in order to break the engagement, even though they had not lived together as man and wife, to break the engagement, he would have had to put her away, which took a legal action. Yes, Gene? And as I understand it, that arrangement could have been made at the birth of the man and woman, or boy and girl baby. Just the tradition of that day and time, I suppose. That, as Gene was explaining, that was the Eastern custom, was to go through the ceremony, the betrothal ceremony, which was just as binding as a marriage, and they were considered the same thing as husband and wife, even though they were not living together. Good question. I'll do some more work on that one. I didn't read it that way. Verse 15 is what you're talking about, right? Take your wife. There's a difference in the translation. The New American Standard says, Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who were to marry his daughters and said, get out of this place. I don't know. That's been a puzzle ever since all of my life. I've heard all kinds of sermons as to why she looked back. She couldn't leave the sin. She had relatives back in the city. Yeah, I'll do some more research and see what I can find out. I've never heard that proposed, that he had other children besides those two daughters, but it's a possibility. Yeah, that's what I'd always thought it was referring to that.
Okay. Well, that'll be a good place to stop. Everybody, that'll be your homework. See what you can find out about Lot's children. How many children did he have? Anybody got any other comment or question? Beginning with verse 15 for next week.